Welcome to Enneagram Conversations with Renee Siegel. Maybe you know your Enneagram type, but what's next? Renee uses the Enneagram in conjunction with self-awareness practices to help people better understand the patterns of their type, including patterns of thinking, emotions, and behaviors. This show is highly interactive. Listen or call in to find out how to identify your type, and for those who do know their type, what can you do next to open yourself up to a greater capacity for personal transformation? We all have great strengths, sitting alongside areas that we need to strengthen. It starts with noticing your patterns. You'll begin to discern whether you need to step in and take action or just sit back and observe. Learn how to dance between observation and participation and watch yourself transform. Enneagram Conversations starts now.
I am so excited today because I have two wonderful women, friends and colleagues who I just adore, who are type ones today to talk to you about what it's like to be a type one, because I can give you lots of information, but hearing it directly from the type is the best. My name is Renee Siegel, and I am your host on Enneagram Conversations, and I welcome today Jenny Yoder and Diane Stallings, and let me just briefly introduce each of them. Jenny is an accredited professional with the International Enneagram Association, a certified professional coach, and specializing in the intersection between psychology and organizational development, working with large and small organizations, helping leadership to transform. And Diane is a holistic registered nurse, and she worked in the ICU for many years, and in 2007 began her own company called Joystream Health, and is also a certified Enneagram professional, and both of them identify as Enneagram Type 1s, and we will call them, there's many, many names, but we're going to use either the perfectionist or the reformer, and I'm going to let you guys take it away with my first question. Welcome, 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 ladies. I'm so happy to have you here. Could you please tell our viewers and listeners what your experience with the Enneagram has been? Just kind of an overview, because we're going to get into a lot of other details too.
Who wants to jump in?
I think you do.
I guess I do. So when I found the Enneagram, I was a very stressed out, well, moderately stressed out ICU nurse. And I was so happy to be able to go to one of Helen Palmer's workshops very soon after I learned about the Enneagram. And from there, I have just been enjoying the Arizona Enneagram Association here that's local. And I have done little workshops for people of just little intros to the Enneagram. And I later became an Enneagram coach. And that's kind of how it is, I guess. I mean, I'm constantly talking with Enneagram friends about this material because it's so useful. And in fact, many years ago, when I first got into it, I taught our local Girl Scout group about the Enneagram. And that opened conversations for years amongst my daughter's peer group. But at any rate, it just is something that is just so useful for everybody's job, family, just everything.
Yeah. Thanks, Diane.
Yeah. So for me, I was introduced to the Enneagram when I was going through my professional coaching certification. They gave us a book there called The Wisdom of the Enneagram. And we spent maybe, I don't know, out of a year-long program, we spent maybe 4 hours on it. And I just got intrigued with it, ended up going to a part one, 4-day workshop back in 2006. And ever since then, I mean, if you look at the books behind me, all the books right over here are all Enneagram books. So I think I've got about 35 by now. primarily I use it as a coach for folks that are interested in learning more about their habitual patterns, the ways of thinking and feeling and behaving, because that's really what our type is. And I also use it a lot with teams in business because, again, it helps them to understand what it is about my preferences, a little bit more about your preferences, so that I can adjust my style more easily to what someone else is displaying, whether or not it's their real type or the mode they're in right then. So really, it's, I'd say, compared to all the other tools I've used in organizational development, it's the most useful that I've actually found in terms of people understanding themselves, increasing that self-awareness, and then really being more mindful about how to adjust to other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned something about people's type and whether or not it shows up in a particular way or whether or not it's their type. And I think one of the, you know, beginning parts of the Enneagram for all of us is a real eagerness around finding our type. You know, what type am I? And there is something that happens oftentimes when you take a snapshot of yourself at a given point in time that may not really reflect your type, because we only have one type. So what would you say to our listeners and viewers as they're exploring, you know, the trying to find their type? Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, one thing I would say, Renee, is even though we do say that people display one primary type and it stays constant throughout their life, I do believe we all have all nine within us. And so really it becomes a journey of understanding, when do the gifts of that other type, when should I adopt some of those so that I can show up more authentically as the situation requires? I do think we're a mix of all of them. It's just that it's kind of like we talk about a pair of glasses. Every day you have nine on your dresser and you could pick up any of the nine, and we tend to pick up the same one over and over and over again. So it kind of becomes our worldview.
Mm-hmm. Our worldview and definitely a reflection of core beliefs that we develop really, really early on, kind of driving the game.
Yeah.
In many ways. How about you, Diane? Do you have any thoughts about?
So when people are trying to figure out their type, you're saying yes?
Yeah.
We have so many wonderful books, but the small book called The Essential Enneagram by David Daniels is very succinct in looking at your emotional habits in many different ways. And one thing that I like to suggest is that people would especially look at what makes them angry, because for me, that was a very telling thing. In that book, there are just particular things that people are upset about, you know, and it boils down to giving too much or having too much responsibility and other people won't step up to the plate. That's the type one. Anyway, I found that book to be quite helpful. And I know that especially the younger generations are not so much into the books, but there's so much material online now, and there are just so many sites compared to how many there were like in 2003 or so when I got into this. But I guess I would say to, you know, take a bunch of different quizzes and you know, just explore that, and also consider this season of your life or this time whether you are feeling extra stressed or relaxed, because we know that your type goes to different other types according to how stressed or relaxed you feel. And of course you have your wings, and so you can actually feel like you're several different types as you're trying to pin down that one type that really nails it.
Yeah. You know, both of you have alluded to something that I think is really important, because there are lots of great assessments and quizzes out there that you can take. And there are podcasts where you can actually listen to people speaking about their type. And sometimes that's really helpful too, because you can resonate with the language and the posture and the verbal and nonverbal cues that you get. But there's something that you've alluded to around motivation, or what's motivating us to do something. So, you know, everybody gets angry, right? But some people get angry for various reasons, right?
Yes.
What gets me angry might be very different than what gets you angry or upset or reactive or whatever. And I love to use the coined phrase for a one, where that we all kind of have some commonalities. When I walk into a group and I'll ask, how many of you think it's important to be a good person? And usually everybody, I mean, every once in a while, you'll find somebody not raising their hand. But well, most people raise their hand, they want to be a good person. And then you ask the question is, can you tell me what motivates you to be a good person? And boy, those answers are so different. You know, you get to look at the core motivation for why somebody is responding to a question. And so let's just jump into that. I mean, ones are perfectionists. They want to do good and right and correct and make the world a better place. Where is the value of knowing about the Enneagram in wanting to improve the world and make it a better place?
Well, I think it starts within you. If I'm looking at the world like everybody else is not good enough, then of course that puts a dark cast on the world, doesn't it? And then when I find out about the Enneagram, I find out that 8 out of 9 people think differently than I do, and that I don't have the answer after all, you know, that certainly makes the world look different from what, I mean, for me as a perfectionist, about the way it used to be when you're trying to hold everybody up to the bar that you have set, and then you find out, hey, that's not what they're thinking about. It's such a wonderful thing to know that we have just so many diverse personalities, and that what's important to them is really, it's not what is important to me, but everybody's got their own, you know, kind of purpose and their innate personality that wants to express that. So I believe that for a type one, making the world a better place also starts within, that I'm not out there judging the whole world, you know, and I'm appreciating these different types that have a way different agenda than I have.
Well, thanks. We're going to be going to break, but when we come back, I want to hear Jenny's take on that too, because I think the value of being a one and trying to improve the world, especially as the world exists today, is a really important question. And I value your input in that. I hope you will stay tuned. We'll be back momentarily. You are listening to Enneagram Conversations with your host, Renee Siegel. If you want to know more about my work, you can find out about it at urpurepotential.com. That is the letter U, the letter R, purepotential.com. And I look forward to you coming back and joining Jenny and Diane and I as we further our conversation about Enneagram Type 1s.
Join the New Earth on the Cornelia Stephanie Show. Tune in each month as Cornelia takes listeners on an odyssey of higher consciousness to inspire, educate, and empower. Cornelia Stephanie is a spiritual teacher, passionate speaker, published author, and founder of the Empower Network. Cornelia guides people on the path of self-healing, peace, and liberation. For more information, go to corneliastephanie.com.
Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Are you ready to invest in your best self? Join Sabrina Wright as she shares tools for creating joy and balance in your life every single day. Sabrina is here to help you become your greatest advocate and empower you to make decisions that will help you live your best life. The Live the Good Life Show, connecting your physical and spiritual self. Every second Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Find Sabrina at the Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, balance.com.
Are you feeling the complexity of life? Do you feel that urge to step into something greater? Tune in to Nailed It Radio. Find your simplicity within your complexity with me, life coach Carrie Nail. Tune in each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com to discover what it means to use your full power to be the best version of yourself. Imagine stepping into the energy of saying yes to yourself and knowing you nailed it. For more information about me, visit CarrieNail.com.
It's your turn to reclaim your life. Experience the unmitigated joy of breathing life into your own passions, into your own purpose, with me, Life Coach Ricky Schwartz, at MyTurnLifeCoaching.com. In the meantime, tune into my show, My Turn Life Coaching, live every second and fourth Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Welcome back to Enneagram Conversations, where I, Renee Siegel, am being joined by Jenny Yoder and Diane Stallings, talking today about the Enneagram Type 1, known as the Perfectionist and the Reformer. And so I turn it over to you, Jenny, to talk about just the value of being a Type 1 today.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it feels more like a curse than a value, I guess I would say. And I guess my preference about the word that I feel like best describes a type one is actually a reformer, because lots of different types can be perfectionists for different reasons, you know, for different motivations. Whereas the reformer, to me, I actually remember as a kid being so drawn to Joan of Arc stories, you know, who would die at the stake for a belief. And it sort of always haunted me. And then, of course, later when I found out that that probably was her type as a type one, it was a little, it felt like a heavy responsibility to be the one that would have to bear that for the world, you know, to be the one that would die over principles, really. So really, I think the value that it can bring to the world is ones have sort of this innate sense of order of what could be the right thing to do when we're healthy, right? When we're not so healthy, we're not any better at it than anyone else. But when we're healthy, having a quiet mind allows us to really get in touch with what needs to happen. And I think that's really the value that we can bring to the world, is that wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there is a lot of different areas that need reform right now. And we start to take a look at, I mean, at any point in history, we've had a lot of things that need correcting and change. I don't think that there's any point in history that we could say that that's not the case. But I think this is a particularly poignant time in history where there are so many things that needs so much attention, you know, for reforming.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. You know, many people may know about type ones, and then some of our listeners and viewers may know very little. So what I'd like you to do, if you each could, is just to describe, you know, what you understand to be characteristics and qualities of your type, so that everybody can get an understanding of that from you.
We have a lot of integrity. We want to do the right thing, and sometimes we have a hard time letting others take action because we feel like we can do it better or we can suggest a better way to do it. I think there's something in us that expects everybody to pull their own weight, and we get upset when they don't, because in many ways we sort of feel responsible for the world. There was a time when I was driving down a country road, shall we say, that I drove down every single day. And in the back of my mind, I felt like I really should spend my weekend cleaning up the trash on this public road. I mean, that's how much I want to repair things, clean things up, you know. It's an innate type one thing. Although I do know that different perfectionists feel that way about different things in their life. Like this department of my life, I keep it pristine. And this other department of my life, I'm not so much fussy about it. But we really value integrity. And our intentions are good, so to speak. We do want to be good. We don't want to admit our mistakes, because we are so attached to being good. And, you know, we come off as arrogant a lot of the time if we're not aware of what we're doing, or sometimes even if we are. But our motivation is really for the good of all. They do call type one the saint, kind of, and we do think we're that good. There's a part of us that feels we're that good. But we also, I think, we're in tune with some of the innate goodness that does exist in the world. And I think we hold a vision of that for the world. I think I better wrap that up. Let's hear from Jenny.
Well, so let's see. What would I add to that? I know for some ones, it's not so much about moral principles. It might be about a different kind of belief. So it's kind of like whatever we're raised with, we adopt and take on. And we feel like it's almost like we feel like we're obligated to do it. And in fact, I would say when we notice we're kind of getting into that unhealthy range, when we're feeling obligated or we're feeling like we have to do something, that's when we're too much in our type, instead of really using all three centers of intelligence, because we talk about our type showing up when we leave a center of intelligence out. And what ones leave out is a quiet mind, because we have this back and forth, back and forth. What is the right thing to do? What's the responsible thing to do? Even if we don't do it, we feel obligated to check in with what it should be or could be at its best. And that can get really old, because it feels like, you know, we have a chatterbox mind all the time. I guess the other thing I would say is that we're naturally good at walking into any place, whether it's outside or a room, and noticing what's wrong. It's like we don't even have to try. In fact, we can try not to and we still notice. So, you know, that's often why we come across as critical, because we see innately what's wrong or what could be better. And so it can come across as a judgment. So what we have to learn is the quality of discernment. So how do I notice but not put a value judgment on it? Like, is this good? Is this bad? Is there too much light behind Renee? Is there not enough light? You know, it's kind of like we just automatically go to that place of noticing and then making a value judgment. And so what we have to forget is that there's no need to make a value judgment. We're actually not, you know, the one in charge of all things. And we don't actually have all the best ideas. We might have one, but, you know, come on, there's lots of others. So, yeah, the other thing I would say is that we tend to really repress our emotions, as do some of the other types. For us, it's more about we feel like we have to control all those crazy impulses that, you know, other people just give into because you know, morally, why would we want to do that, right? So, you know, again, as we get a little more healthy, we realize, oh, that's more like a straitjacket instead of really how we want to be.
Yeah. There's a lot of shoulds that come up for many people in life, but the shoulds seem to have a really strong impact in this type. A should can be running the show a lot of time, that sense of obligation. And again, that's also true with an inner critic. I think every type has an inner critic, right? So how would the inner critic of a type one differ from perhaps other types?
Well, for me, an inner critic is like, it feels like it's us. I mean, it's hard to distinguish what is an inner critic voice versus what is really me. You know, at my best, it's like one in the same voice. It's kind of like what I was talking about, that chatterbox. It's like it sits on your shoulder and it's always there and it's got a really loud voice. And so, you know, many times when we're correcting other things, it's kind of like we've gotten a message from this inner critic. You know, the tough thing is we're so hard on other people and so critical and judgmental when we're not very healthy. And in reality, we've started being that with ourselves. So we're more critical of ourselves. Diane, I know you said, you know, we don't like to admit mistakes. What I have found is that if I believe I've made a mistake, I'll spend all this time going back through, what did I do? What should I have done? So I don't ever make that mistake again, and just agonizing, trying to go, I want to make sure I didn't intentionally make a mistake. It's like, it's okay if I made it unintentionally, but I certainly didn't do it intentionally, right? So it's kind of just this, it's like having this inner parent in your head. The worst parent you ever had or the strictest teacher is like a resident all the time in your head until you throw it out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Diane, what would you say?
Well, I was just going to say, yes, how strong the inner critic is for us and how hard it is to kind of get ahead of the inner critic. I mean, you and I, Jenny, I know we've done years of inner work, and I still find it crops up so easily that something inside me is telling me it must be this way. And then I turn around and say, oh, that's my critic again, you know? And so as you say, it's almost like it's part of us. And it is hard to notice that the inner critic is telling me, this isn't right, this has to be better. You have to go back and repair that. You might repair something a bunch of different times, and yet your inner critic is still not happy with it, you know? So that's a biggie for us perfectionists.
Yeah.
Sure. Hard to get away from that.
Great information. We all have inner critics, but the one's inner critic sounds like it works overtime. And maybe more attached to the same voice that we have versus it sounding like it may be coming from somewhere else, or maybe it's just a bit stronger. But again, we all have an inner critic. And I thank you both. We're just about ready to go to our next break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about things that you actually enjoy about your type, things that you celebrate about your type and embrace about your type. And then we'll talk about things that are challenges of the type, and then what somebody might want to do that's just learning about the Enneagram, or even those who've learned a lot that want to practice and go further, because just merely learning about the Enneagram is cheating yourself of all that the Enneagram studies have to offer you. My name is Renee Siegel. Thank you for joining Enneagram Conversations, and I look forward to you joining us after break.
Not just talk, conversation for profound self-awareness. Stick with us. Your best life awaits on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Imagine what it would be like to turn your pain into purpose. Tune in to Transformation with Martinet every second and fourth Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Martinet and her guests are here shining their lights today through empowering stories of hardship and transformation. Begin to see your life in a new light. Visit martineemmons.com and tune in every second and fourth Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific to Transformation with Martinet.
Are you living life, or is life living you? Tap into the divine love, healing, and wisdom already in you with T. Lotus on Triple L, the Live Love Lotus Show, every first and third Friday at 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. To learn more about how to consciously create your most incredible life, join the Sacred Path online community. It's free. Visit thesacredpath11.com to join. That's thesacredpath11.com.
Transformation Talk Radio.
The truth is funny. Shift happens with monthly guest host Karen Benton. Tune in for powerful conversations about health and wellness. Karen brings unique insights rich with humor and science to her discussions with experts in medicine, movement, psychology, spirituality, and so much more. Don't miss Karen on The Truth is Funny every third Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about Karen, visit KarenBenton.com.
Can't get enough of Eye of Soul Radio? Join psychic medium Jamie every Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. Take a deeper look at the raw side of spirit. Nothing is off limits. Connect with lost loved ones and explore these vulnerable subjects with the compassionate guidance of psychic medium Jamie. You are not alone. Eye of Soul, Thursdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, only on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
We'd love to hear from you on Transformation Talk Radio and live on Facebook. Call into the show, 1-800-930-2819.
Welcome back to Enneagram Conversations, where I am so privileged to have a conversation with Jenny Yoder and Diane Stallings, our Enneagram Type 1s, the Perfectionist Reformer, and we are going to move into talking about what they love about being their type. I know that when I first learned about my type, and it is not a Type 1, I was really focused on what I didn't like about my type. And it took a while for me to really find things that I enjoyed. I think it's kind of like the old adage, you give somebody 10 compliments and then point out one thing wrong, and where they pay attention to is the thing that needs correcting, whether you're a Type 1 or not. And so ladies are absolutely seasoned in terms of looking at themselves, a journey that I know takes a lifetime. What do you enjoy about your type? What would you like people to know about you? And then how are you different? How do you know that you're different from other types? And I encourage you to go back and forth with each other around this topic, because that's a lot to unpack.
Diane, you can start. I can't think of anything right now.
Well, I am so grateful that I have a sense of discipline, because it helps me reach my goals pretty well if I set my mind to do something. And that also, I keep my promises as a perfectionist. You know, you really can count on a perfectionist. If you ask them to do something, they agree, they really will do it. The longer I live, the more careful I am about my promises, because I know that I want to fulfill them, you know. You can count on a perfectionist reformer to be on time and to be efficient, you know. Since we're trustworthy, we have integrity, and since we do notice what's wrong so quickly, I think we're also very good at repairing things, you know. And one of those is for the health of the physical health of the family. I bring this up because I spent most of my career as a nurse, and I was learning the Enneagram while I was still working at the hospital. And I immediately recognized lots and lots of perfectionists who worked at the hospital. I mean, we're not supposed, it's not recommended to try to guess what other people's type is, but you can kind of recognize the people who are a lot like you, and they're saying the same things you are. And I found myself very grateful that the hospital was filled with perfectionists, because who do you want working on your body, right? Yeah. So I think that we do an awesome job. We just have to be careful not to be so critical and judgy and hard on ourselves, right? But anyway, those are the things that I value. How about Jenny?
So I guess what I would say is, now you wouldn't see evidence if you saw my desk, but I do have sort of this innate sense about order. And if I'm really upset about something, the best way for me to work off that extra anger energy is to go clean or go put things in order, right? It's like almost therapeutic. And so we do choose, right, what we want to be in order or what not. But it's like I don't have to worry about, do I know how to do that? It's like when I did a Gallup Strengths Finder, which is just, you can get a book and basically online take that assessment. One of the things that came up is called arranger. And arranger, A-R-R-A-N-G-E-R, means, you know, taking things that are in chaos and making sense of them. And so, you know, as a coach, right, I hear someone's story, I hear their views about it. It's easy for me to ask the questions to help them see the trends or to see maybe where things are in alignment or out of alignment. So when I say order, it's almost alignment is the word that I would say is easier for us to get a sense of that when we're healthy, right? When we're aware of what some of those patterns are. I think the other thing is it's really easy for us to be calm and in control if there's chaos, if there's too much drama in the workplace. It's really easy for us to just go solve the problem. Of course, that can get in our way if we put problem solving ahead of relationships, right? But it's easy to go solve a problem, to roll up our sleeves, get down to work, look at the logic, look at the data. We tend not to really get caught up in emotion. In fact, we have to remember to express emotions and process them, because we kind of have a tendency to think emotions get in the way, right, of solving a problem. So that's often why sometimes we get told we're a little cold, or we're not very approachable, or we're too serious, because, you know, we don't want to be having too much fun, because things need to be fixed and taken care of. And if we're all out having fun, who's going to do the work, you know? So it's easy for me to be the first one to volunteer to help clean up after a meal, even if it's at someone else's party, because I have that innate sense of let's do what needs to be done, you know, not just about a moral principle, but just what's the work that needs to be done. And we'll tend to jump in, roll up our sleeves.
Yeah, you've referenced this logic, order, a lot of references to the head. And in our earlier Enneagram training, setting things up, we talked a lot about the centers, the three centers. Yeah. And the type one sits in the body center, does not sit in the head center. And so often type ones are, and sometimes even type eights, not generally type nines, but type ones and type eights are confused for a head centered type, because logic shows up, or order and putting facts and information together, or arranging, all of those things don't kind of, at least to me, they don't align with this whole notion of instinctual intelligence.
So we kind of believe our body is a problem or at fault. You know, we don't want to be run by our impulses. And so we keep a really tight rein on that. We have this tension. You know, we don't live in the past and we don't live in the future, but we don't want to be here either. You know, it's this sense of, you know, because it's not right. And so there is sort of this sense of, I'm overusing my head intelligence. I don't have a quiet mind. So when the one in us shows up, we're basically leaving out a quiet mind. And when we have a quiet mind, we wouldn't have an inner critic. We don't have any shoulds. We're actually leaving space for that inner knowing to show up. versus us going back and forth with a chatterbox mind. So it's really about quieting that mind so that we can actually listen to the wisdom of our bodies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And listening to the wisdom of your bodies or thinking about the whole body type, could you talk a little bit about anger too? Because you both referenced the word anger. And, you know, my personal way of understanding some of the difficult emotions in life, we have categorically like positive emotions and what we would call challenging emotions, and anger and fear and distress show up in the challenging emotional group. And for our body types, eights, nines, and ones, anger shows up in a particular way. How does that work for ones?
Diane, I'll let you start since you brought it up first.
Okay, I will. Just a quick note about us being a body type. You know, I find that we do go with our gut sometimes. I mean, if we're not too caught up in our head chatter, we can trust our gut to tell us what needs to be done too, in a more broad sense. So I want to throw that in for the body part. But so our anger is definitely repressed. When I first learned about the Enneagram, I thought to myself, well, I look like a perfectionist and a reformer, but I'm not angry. And it took me really several years to notice that I really was angry, that many times my knee-jerk reaction to something would actually be anger, even though we're covering it up, because us perfectionists, we are good girls and good boys. But for instance, just even driving through traffic, and if they've got the road narrowed for construction, immediately I'm actually kind of peeved about that. And we will use words like I'm peeved or I'm irritated, I'm a little frustrated. We will hardly ever say that we're angry, because that's just not polite, you know. And we are keeping wraps on our anger until we notice it. It's hard for us to notice it, manage it, but it's showing us our boundaries, you know, and it's teaching us like everything else. So,
yeah, one thing I would say about anger is it shows up more as frustration. That things aren't right, that people aren't right, people aren't doing their work, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, because we don't really think we should be yelling and screaming and, you know, really displaying anger, we kind of, it's like a volcano. You know, when we talk about the eight, right, the anger comes out like a volcano that exploded. If you think about a nine, it's like the volcano in the belly before, you know, it's anything's going to happen. And we ones, we're kind of walking around sputtering when they say, oh, it's going to blow anytime soon, you know, because like we might not really slam a door, but we're going to close it extra hard, or we're going to walk really tightly, because we tend to hold a lot of that tension in our bodies. Because we haven't expressed the anger. So for us, actually saying what we need and expressing and processing anger is really important, because otherwise the mental habit becomes, I'm going to be resentful. And so it kind of just clogs up the free flow. I mean, anger, we talk about actually rage being, you know, the true emotion, which rage means when you make me feel like I'm being held down, I feel like my aliveness is taken away. And so, of course, we hate that, right? So we feel like we need to have some expression.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, ladies. We are going to take a break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about the challenges of type one and your continuing Enneagram journey, and what you'd like to tell people who want to continue on an Enneagram journey too. Stay tuned. We'll be back for the last segment of our show.
Back in that jazz mood, aren't we? I don't know. What happened to the rap music, Benny?
So, oh my gosh.
There you go.
Thank you, Benny.
I like it.
You're welcome.
I'm going to play that in my car.
Boy, I got to have me some baked something now. I'm telling you.
Get in the groove with Dr. Pat and her guests on Transformation Talk Radio. It's always something new around here. Visit thedrpatshow.com.
Burnout can feel like a heavy cloud hanging over everything you do. If you're tired of being tired, be true to yourself and take action today, the Burn Bright Way. I, Jennifer Marcinelli, focus on providing energy solutions that manifest practical, real-life results. So what are you waiting for? Tune in to Burn Bright Today, Mondays at 9 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Central, 12 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information on how to heal from burnout, visit BurnBrightToday.com.
Not just talk, conversation for profound self-awareness. Stick with us. Your best life awaits on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Feeling stuck? Journey into a new exciting reality today. Join Coach Christine Clark as she helps you forge the life you desire. Through processes that shape, hone, refine, elasticize, and transform you, go beyond the curve and call in your unique destiny. Tune into the show, Forging a Life, live every fourth Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. To work with Christine, visit SunglowTransformation.com.
You're driven, and it totally shows. Your career is taking off, you're killing it in the mom game, but did your health needs make it on the plate this week? Tune in to Boss Up Babes, where Carissa Adkins helps babes show up, boss up, and thrive every second and fourth Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Become the boss babe you were meant to be. To sign up for one of Carissa's group coaching programs, visit 365dailyhustle.com.
Inspire, create, empower, only on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Welcome back to Enneagram Conversations. We are at the last segment of our show. Again, I am so happy to have Jenny Yoder and Diane Stallings here today with me to speak to you about the Enneagram Type 1. We're going to wrap up today talking about the challenges of this particular type and their continued Enneagram journey and what they would suggest for those of you who are beginning an Enneagram journey or want to journey into knowing more about the Enneagram. So what are the challenges of type one?
I would say one of them is being misunderstood. We really do want the best for everybody, and then people misunderstand that because we get bossy and everything. We are like the biggest tryhards ever, I think. I could be wrong about that, but we know that we need to learn to relax, but it's not just not that easy, you know? But like I say, the inner critic, no matter how much work you do on yourself, the inner critic is still around. It's still lurking around.
So challenges, I think we talked about a lot of them. I think really feeling like it's truly not just feeling, so it's feeling emotionally and also believing intellectually, as well as being willing to use our body. You know, it gets so easy to get so constrained in our little worldview and, you know, to have that tension impact everything we do. We like to think that no one knows how, you know, it is inside of our world. And yet we display it more than what we know because our anxiety, our anger, right, shows up to the people around us. I think for me, the biggest challenge is to really believe that it's truly okay to have fun and that the work can wait, that the work doesn't need to happen first. It's really hard for me if I haven't done my work to then go play a game of golf or go do something fun if I know I have to come back and do some work. Whereas my husband, who's not a type one, he can do that in a heartbeat. For me, it's just really hard. I want to get that work done and then I can relax. Of course, the problem is there's so many things in the world to be fixed. When does a relaxation time ever come? And so for me, over the, you know, since I've known about the Enneagram, really to let myself relax and really not do anything and not feel like I need to get up and do anything. Often we say for ones, they actually have to be on vacation to relax because, you know, the rest of the time I'm getting ready for vacation or I'm making sure everybody else is ready. So, I think the biggest challenge for me is to believe I'm not responsible for anything else other than myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a daughter who is a one and she is a food scientist and she certifies organic farmers all over the planet. Doing food audits and things like that. And I can really hear her when you say if she's not on vacation, she's always aware of what's going on at work. Sunday, Saturdays, doesn't matter. Yeah. And the whole notion about having fun, talk more about that. What is it like to have fun?
Fun feels frivolous unless everything else is taken care of. And it's almost like, I mean, I grew up in a family of 9 kids and I'm the only type one and my siblings don't have trouble just, you know, relaxing and having fun. What's up with me? It's not like I grew up with a different, you know, life experience. And I guess the other thing I want to say is that rules are self-imposed. So I don't really buy into rules from other people. I can decide those rules are stupid. I don't really need to go by them. But my own rules, now those are important. And I think the other thing that's gotten me in trouble is what Diane alluded to earlier about how when someone makes an agreement with us, we actually expect them to keep it. And that can be kind of hard because other people maybe don't have that same expectation. You know, I agreed then, but it doesn't mean I'm going to agree 10 years later to still, I mean, I said that once, but for goodness sakes, like, you know, this is now. And for us, it's like we're obligated to keep that agreement, whatever it was, or to go back and renegotiate. And other people don't feel the need to necessarily do that like we do. So that often gets us in trouble with relationships.
Very good point. Yeah. Yeah. We don't want dessert until we eat the meat, as they say in Pink Floyd. You can't have your pudding till you eat your meat. I want to say a word to the people that are just trying to figure out their type. And if they feel that they are a type one perfectionist, when you start reading more about what the perfectionist is, what they do, you can also get really down on yourself. It can be painful, although I think for many types, it feels painful to admit the full spectrum, the full picture of their type, because you're thinking, gosh, I don't do that, do I? And then you find out, yes, I've been doing that. And it's, I don't know, some of the first books I was reading, they were just covered with tears. They were, because there was so much self-judgment. It was very hard. I mean, I don't know if that everybody would react that way, but us perfectionists, we just really are. We don't want to be disappointing. We really want to be good, and it's hard for us to admit our weaknesses. And, of course, that's part of this whole Enneagram thing, is to learn about your vulnerabilities and to recognize the whole picture of the way your habit of mind is working. Mm-hmm. And so you want to go gently with all of this and just be kind to yourself. Just be gentle with yourself.
Yeah, one thing I want to say also to ones is that this isn't about a self-improvement project, right? So you already have been doing that your whole life. You really need to do the opposite of what you would think to do and be more present, breathe a little bit more, stretch your muscles instead of letting them be tight. And really noticing what the tension's about, right? What's really behind that? And it's okay for ones to have needs, just like every other human being. The hard part is admitting that we actually have any, right? Because we've been trying so hard and we're so exhausted, right? So yeah, lighten up and just let go. Be more present with the people in your life.
Yeah. One little activity that helped me lighten up a whole lot is actually sitting down outdoors, maybe not right now in the summer, but blowing bubbles because it's calming, it's deep breathing, and every single bubble is a perfect sphere. And you can take 2 minutes to do that, and it's just one of many ways that you can actually lighten up and let go of whatever bone you're chewing, you know.
Yeah, I've always been in strenuous, you know, I played soccer, I played racquetball. I've done a lot of things that really make your muscles tighter. So when I first got into yoga, that was so helpful because it actually, the stretching out is what really is the opposite of what we tend to do. The other thing I just did is learn to play golf after the age of 60, which gives you that beginner's mind and noticing, oh, it's okay to learn. I don't have to know it all before I start, right? I can be imperfect and still have a good time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you have both given our listeners and viewers a really strong foundational understanding, much better than I could do just describing the type. And I thank you so much for being on today and sharing your experience and strength and hope for those people. Remember that the Enneagram is, you know, the Enneagram practices are really cultivated by turning your awareness inside. They're cultivated by embracing all aspects of your type, the warts and freckles included. And it's just the beginning of your journey, this self-awareness. The noticing needs to be accompanied by self-compassion. And as your self-compassion grows, your compassion for others grows. I love this statement. It is follow your breath, claim inner peace, and move forward with grounded presence. And I think that's true for all types. And I thank you for joining me on Enneagram Conversations. If anybody wants to know more about the work that is happening at UR Pure Potential or has questions for me, please do not hesitate to email me at Renee, R-E-N-E-E, at U, the letter U, the letter R, purepotential.com. Thank you so much for joining me, ladies. I so appreciate your presence today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Renee. It was fun.
Yeah. Cool.
Thanks for listening to Enneagram Conversations. Renee is on a mission to guide people towards cultivating inner observation, which assists with self-awareness and expansion. Identify your type, notice your patterns, and learn how to unlock the higher aspects of your Enneagram type. There is limitless potential inside you already, just waiting to be unveiled. Join Renee next time on this journey of self-discovery and create more purpose and power in your life. For more information about Renee and her work, visit youarepurepotential.com. That's the letter U, the letter R, purepotential.com. Until next time, remember, you are pure potential.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.